Welcome to The Rebuild. My name is Peter Moses. I am in Los Angeles, and today we have a very special guest for you. He is the president and founder of The Rebuild. His name is Jordan Zerm. You can check him out on The Checkdown for NFL, where he is the meme daddy. That's probably not his actual technical title, now that I think about it. But hey, maybe he'll tell me differently. Excited, we get into an awesome conversation. He's got some hot Browns takes, and basically it's just good to hear his voice, guys. You know, we all missed him. I missed him. He's my podcast father who went out for a pack of cigarettes and never came back. I do have one review to read because, as always, on this iteration of The Rebuild, if you leave a five-star review, I will read anything that you say. This one was by HollywoodBucks2799. Five stars. Title is Refreshingly Different and Brutally Honest Browns Takes. These guys are great when providing unique, different, brutally honest, and hilarious takes on the latest Browns news. Highly encourage adding them to your Browns list of podcasts, especially if you're tired of the local Cleveland media's negative takes and lack of perspective. Thank you so much, HollywoodBucks2799. Very timely review, because that's some of the stuff that you'll hear Jordan and I talk about in this pod. So why should I delay your enjoyment of the sultry tones of Jordan Zerm? Here we go. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break to tell you about Bet Online. March has arrived, and we are only a few weeks away from the big tournament. Make sure to head to Bet Online and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting March 15th. That's right, I said $100,000 in March 15th. You don't need to be hardcore to get in on the action, and with multiple entries available, it's this season's best chance to cash in. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong, and whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends at betonline.ag to take advantage of the best bonus in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use the promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign-up bonus. That's betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Okay, back to the show. All right, I am here today with, I don't want to call you the pod father. That's so overused. I'd say the rabbi of this feed, the rabbi of The Rebuild.
Wow.
There it is. I knew it would come to me.
That's beautiful. That
Jordan
is beautiful.
Zerm, welcome back. Welcome home, man.
Wow. You know, it feels good. It's like walking in the door of your childhood home. You know, it's what it feels like. So thank you for, you know, you moved in. Maybe you moved a little bit of furniture around, but thank you for like saving my favorite chair and allowing me to come
knock
sit
down
back
a wall.
It.
For sure.
Yeah, you gotta, you know, you need to be able to see the TV from the kitchen.
Listen,
and I get it.
I want to just put all of the Twitter people to rest now. There is no rivalry between us at all. All right. It's
truly just a deep love. It's really what
it
is.
A friendship that goes unacceptably longer than any of you could possibly actually think when listening to this podcast.
You can't even fathom it.
Listen, man, you've been hiding in a Los Angeles cave for at least 9 months now. I mean, do you care to give to the world in an audible form your summation of what the hell we all just lived through last season? Or do you want to just get right to the coaches? I mean, this is your platform, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was, well, first of all, it was the weirdest season of football for me because every Sunday I was essentially just watching all NFL games at one time as we, you know, were looking for stuff socially to post and all of that stuff. So like, it was a very different, like super weird and different experience of watching the Browns where I couldn't really fully like pay attention to their games in the obsessive way that I'm used to watching, you know, constant misery. So I guess like if there was a positive of how disappointing this season was, it was that I didn't have as much time as I usually do to just like sit and just
how lucky for you. That was nice.
Yeah.
You were too busy to really suffer. I know when I feel like you work at the Checkdown and you're watching all the games, I imagine you like one of those bald women in that Tom Cruise movie. where like they're just like learning everything. Minority Report.
Yeah,
like
there you go.
Like taking it all in, like plugging in to basically Andrew Siciliano and just like typing away like a crazy person.
Yeah, that's what it. That's essentially what it was. It was a lot. It was a very. It's like being in a. It was just like sensory overload. Like we're in a room and all the lights are off, but there's like 30 TVs. So you're just like being blasted by football from every direction and grabbing highlights and all this stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing was that, you know, I was very pro Freddie Kitchens, pro the hire of Freddie Kitchens. But I think what this goes to show is that it's really hard to know the inner workings of a coaching staff unless you're in the building. I think we all thought that Freddie Kitchens, at least then, I mean, I think I thought this, I think other people did too, just from articles that were written and people that I talked to, was that like, not only did Freddie Kitchens have a good relationship with Baker, which I thought was important, but also I pretty much gave him most of the credit, if not all of the credit, for their sort of offensive renaissance that they had in the 8 games or whatever it was that he took over as a play caller. And I think there, in fact, I probably know, and I think other people know, there was more going on behind the scenes with other members of the staff that were probably more involved than some of us knew or really had any idea about. And it's sort of something you dismiss at first, like, you know, they were talking about, oh, Ken Zampezi, the quarterback coach, wasn't retained. And everybody was like, OK, whatever. It's a quarterback coach. Like, how much impact does he actually
turns
have?
Turns out a lot.
And then it turns out maybe he had a lot, and maybe he was a better option than the first year had never coached Ryan Lindley coming in and working. So it's little things like that that I think we probably, one, didn't know about, and then two, sort of dismissed. And then, you know, you heard a little bit about it as the season went on, and then you sort of heard comments from, I thought Jarvis Landry had some really telling comments as he was making the media rounds during the Super Bowl week about Freddie and just how he just wasn't equipped to coach a team and probably should never have been in that position. And so it's, you know, I think I'm just now thinking about how much has happened. Like, not only did Freddie go, but then John Dorsey went. So it's just like so much went on. But it's like, you know, I don't think it's Freddie's fault necessarily that he failed as a coach. I think a lot of it's crazy that John Dorsey was working in that organization and saw the inner workings of how everything went, you would think, and still decided that Freddie Kitchens was ready for this type of job when he clearly wasn't. So I think it just kind of goes back to like, that was a colossal mistake. And for us on the outside, you know, we only have so much information and we can only kind of go off of what we watched on Sundays. But it's very clear that, especially for an offense and for a developing quarterback, that there are a lot of different people involved with that sort of success. And we sort of saw what happens when you lose some of those people. And then Freddie Kitchens had to turn his attention to the entire team and et cetera. So, I mean, just like incredibly disappointing. But I will finish this way too long monologue that I just had here by saying that I do think that there is reason to like be optimistic, because I do think that they have a lot of pieces in place. And I think a sort of better structured coaching staff, which is hopefully what we'll see, is going to be able to sort of just retool things a little bit, and they should hopefully look like a completely different
Listen,
team.
Man, that was not long at all. You've had this pent in for 9 months.
Yeah, can you tell? Only, been deep, listen, in, you deep
just,
inside.
You just let it flow, man. This is just going to be like an in treatment on HBO. You just need you grab the wheel whenever you need it. I mean, I've been thinking about.
Thanks, man.
What happened in terms of like, because like we all believed in Freddie Kitchens so much, and anyone in the national media, like everyone was drinking the Kool-Aid, every single person, we all were. And I've been trying to think of an analogy of what it's kind of like. And the closest I can get to is like, have you ever seen The Music Man? You know, The Music Man?
I don't know if I've ever actually
all right, well,
seen
the premise
it.
Of The Music Man is like, there's this con artist who just like goes like town to town and like convinces people to like buy like musical instruments for a big show. And he like cons a whole city. Like everyone gets conned by like this one guy. And I feel like Freddie Kitchens and John Dorsey like accidentally conned everyone. Like they didn't even know that they were doing it together, but like everyone was bought in. I mean, we were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And like, yeah. I mean, it was everywhere. So you can't like blame. I feel like trying to assign blame or trying to kind of like make this like grand generalizations about people afterwards is like, no, we all just got hosed. Like, it was so bad, Dorsey had to get fired. There wasn't, and we all knew it. I mean, like, yeah, it was really brutal. It really was like a different way that I never thought we would all kind of just get like.
Yeah, it destroyed. Was, I mean, I think like it was, you know, like the summed up in just like they just wouldn't throw the ball to Odell in the red zone, like ever. They just refused to do it. And you're just sitting there every week and you're like, this is the week that they throw the ball to the maybe one of the best wide receivers in the NFL in the red zone. And then they just wouldn't do it. And you were like, well, something is wrong.
It did like feel something... like the Browns offense was being like played by like someone who plays Madden, like just to be contrarian.
Yes. Or it was just like, I am going, they all think I'm going to throw to Odell. So every time I'm not going to ever do it. And I'm like, well, maybe do it once. I don't know. Maybe try
really
once.
Gonna fake him out and then is what if we just run Dontrell Hilliard and leave Chubb and Hunt on the bench? Huh?
You know, it's this is incredible. That reminds me of, I literally was sitting. I was sitting at a table on the NFL Network / digital campus where I work, and a security guard walks up to me. And it started as it was the day of, I guess this was yesterday. Yeah, this was yesterday. I don't know why this feels like a billion years ago, but, so it was the day of, they had the memorial service for Kobe, and he comes up to me and he's like, hey, I'm walking around asking everybody for their favorite, like top three Kobe moments. And I was like, oh man, I'm not really like, I'm from the other side of the country. Kobe's not really like, I wasn't a Lakers fan, so I don't really, that's not really my thing. And he's like, oh, where are you from? I was like, oh, I'm from Cleveland. And he, because of course, like anybody that works in this NFL building apparently just knows everything about the NFL. He was just like, oh, what'd you think about like Freddie Kitchens getting fired? And I was like, oh, wow. But he goes, man, you know what? Actually, I remember when they called a draw on 4th and 9 against the Rams. Like this man remembered that play. This man I had never met before in my life. Just like a random security guard, just like walking around, making the rounds. And that was the first thing that came to his mind. And I was like, that is such a representation of how that season went. It was like, that's immediately where his mind
that
went
was
to.
There was like three examples of that in every game. And that was such a painful one that I had even just put out of my mind. I can't believe.
Yeah, he brought it. He brought it back. He brought those memories right back.
There's just moments.
So shout out to that guy.
Also, anytime you watch the Browns, for me, that moment was the first quarter against San Francisco on Monday night.
Oh my God! Yes.
Like, all right. Well, these people are playing very different games in terms of the preparation and planning of what's happening on this field.
Yeah, that was that combined with then Nick Bosa doing the planting of the flag. It was really just it hurt all around deeply. And that's when you were like, I mean, listen, the 49ers went to the Super Bowl. Obviously, they were an incredible team. But the inability of the Browns to do like anything in that game, you're like, well, maybe they're not. Maybe there's going to be some issues. So
it was rough.
Yeah, man, it was the most hyped I've been for a season. And then equaled in disappointment, which rarely happens because you rarely have. Especially over the years, as the more Brown seasons you've watched, I rarely go into a season now with like feeling as hyped and optimistic as I did going into this season. And there was like plenty of reason for it. And then it just really was just like, oh, this isn't working whatsoever. And they're going to have more changes. And here
we
are.
I feel like this season prepared me, though, for this off season so far, because I actually really like the Stefanski hire. I like DePodesta. I mean, I like that Andrew Berry and Kyle Stefanski just like each other. I think that's,
they're like, they're bros.
Listen, like, anything's a step up from Ray Farmer and Mike Patton. Like it's a good idea if two
just
the GM
like
and
wouldn't
the coach,
speak
like, genuinely just would like to work together.
Yeah. That seems like it seems like it should be the bare minimum. But I saw a tweet today, and I'm going to forget who it was, but somebody who was at the combine that said while Kevin Stefanski was up doing his interview at the podium that Andrew Berry was just like smiling and nodding in the back. And I was like, you know what? I know this means nothing, but this is the type of content that I want. This is what I need. I need these anecdotes.
Just like two handsome dudes in a buddy comedy bringing us victories.
Yeah, man. Just like having light beers and hanging out, you know?
Someone's got to do it stress-free in Berea because I don't know who else it could be. I mean, yeah, I'm excited about all of it, but I'm just not going to get hurt again, too. I feel like after last year, like I'm just like I will not be upset. I will not let this team make me upset right now. And I don't understand how like I know I shouldn't be excited. That's what I've learned. But I also know like there's equally no reason to be upset about something that none of us know. The whole world agreed last year that Freddie Kitchens was sweet. So you can't all be like, this is going to suck because he's not Josh McDaniels. Just how the time space continuum works is it just hasn't fucking happened yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I've sort of got to a point and I thought that like when Stefanski was hired and he had his press conference and then there was just like, you know, usually after a press conference, even if it's like somebody that's been there a year and they get fired, they have to hire somebody else. Like, there's some buzz or there's some talk about it. And it was just, and I think this is probably half because people are just like, I don't care anymore. Like we have so little control over who they hire. Obviously we have no control over it. Like, this is who they hired. This is what the season's going to be. It's whatever. I'm so beaten down. But it was also like, I think partially a good thing was that Stefanski just kind of had the presser. It was like, all right, we got to roll. Like the combine's coming up, the draft's coming up. And it was just very like matter of fact and it kind of just like happened and then people moved on from it. And I think that was good in a sense because it was just like there was no fanfare about it. There was no, and that's obviously people are, like just beaten down by it and don't care. And I think I feel a little bit of that where it's like, yeah, I can't like, yeah, I like the hire, but like I've liked other hires. And like you said, everybody was pretty much, it was a consensus that Freddie was the right pick at that time. And like, you're just being so wrong and knowing so little. It's just, it's so hard, man. It's so hard to understand. Like, I like Kevin Stefanski's offensive philosophy. I think he's going to be freed up from having to run the ball as much as they did in Minnesota because Mike Zimmer is a crazy person. And I'm always going to lean towards the side of being pro people who are like open to analytics and open to like being progressive and using different ways to like acquire information. Like, I'm always going to be for that. So I think Andrew Berry is a really smart dude. And yeah, so you hope that this is all going to work in concert. And I just like at the very bare minimum of all of this, ever since Jimmy Haslam has, you know, purchased the team, it's just like he's just been, people have not fit with each other from the front office to the coaching staff to all of it. There have been breaks in philosophies, breaks in personalities, like all this stuff. And it's just like for one time, if you can get the smallest thing right, just get people who aren't going to be in there trying to make a power play and trying to take over different parts of the organization and force how they view players and their thoughts on football onto somebody else. Like, I have no idea how they ever thought it. It's just truly amazing that like it got to this point when Haslam was like, you know what, maybe this time I should get people who agree on stuff. Like, it's just, I mean, like, ah, yeah, man, 7 years later. Well, that's good. Yeah, good for you.
Really just not sharp to the whip, that guy. That's what I'll say.
Not great.
Listen, I think the only thing that could have satisfied me to not be acting crazier right now or more pessimistic is that we just have a meticulous, handsome robot as our coach who seems like he just wants to meticulously coach football. And every time someone says analytics and you're like, and anyone out there is like, rolls their eyes, just replace the word analytics with homework. Analytics is just fucking homework. You know who's like good at like stuff when you were like in class? The kids who did the homework. Like, why? Like,
yeah,
don't, like, they're not gonna, I don't think Stefanski is going to be going to see the movies the Friday before a game in a Pittsburgh started at shirt. I think that's a safe bet.
Really, you could do a 30 for 30 on this entire season. That was what an incredible moment that was. Stefanski's facial hair is impeccable. And I think that's worth at least one win, if not two. So I think we can just check off two wins for the facial
Stefanski
hair alone.
Looks like every model in a Men's Warehouse commercial.
Like 100%, he's in an old Men's
right.
Warehouse
it's
commercial.
Like,
there's
it's
no
very
doubt
like
in my
2003
mind.
Men's Warehouse, like like getting a homecoming suit there.
Yeah, it's like he's a good looking dude, but he also just looks like he never like he only has, but he also has one facial expression.
Yes.
You know, so like he doesn't really have
yes.
a range. He just. It's like he looks good in that face, but hey, man, like, are you happy?
He might as well have like his face painted on a Lego character, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. He is a Lego character that once appeared in
yes.
a Men's Warehouse commercial. We've gotten to
the center of the maze now. Everyone can stop podcasting. We have solved.
Yep. That's it. That's it for us.
Mystery. Listen, he can also fix quarterbacks, and I'll be damned if I don't want to support the only good quarterback we've ever had, basically in yours and mine's like football lifetime. Baker's had a rough, maybe eight 10 months or so. Hasn't been so good.
Been
yeah,
a rough go of it for old Bake.
Listen,
for
if
old
we
Bakey.
Can stick with this franchise that just does nothing but wait till we're sleeping and rip our heart out and chop it up into a million pieces. Like, we should probably try to give Baker Mayfield, like, you know, a coach who knows what he's doing, like, once.
Yep.
That
would be good. I think the downside of another downside of Freddie Kitchens, to add to the many, was that it seemed like his relationship with Baker was pretty buddy-buddy and was not like coach player. We need you to get better and fix your footwork and do all this type of stuff like that. Apparently was not the relationship they had. So yeah, I think Baker also brought some of it on himself. And I think he like uncharacteristically tried to make like way too much happen and got out of like what he was as a rookie. So yeah, man, it's a big third year for Baker, because if he struggles again, then you kind of have to start asking the quarterback question again. And I just would love not to have to do that anymore. So I'm hoping that, yeah, with Stefanski and Alex Van Pelt, the quarterback coach / maybe offensive coordinator, who has already talked about fixing Baker's footwork, which I think is like a huge deal that like that was he's already like talking about what he wants to
and
do
had
footwork
to fix
wise
it so bad that
something...
he like talked about it in the media.
Yeah,
like it wasn't those.
Yeah,
it wasn't
he was like hey
Sage
first
Rosenfeld
thing
being like, all right, let me take you really, let me break it down for you. It's like, hey, so I could see this yeah. from the other side of the state that he was lying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand that. There's so many people who are professional and this guy comes in is like, oh yeah, he was, his feet were facing the wrong way the whole time.
I know.
What?
It's like,
what are you talking about? No one catches that?
Yeah. And then nobody saw it. Nobody's worried about it. It's like when, do you remember when the Browns were on Hard Knocks?
Oh, yeah,
I don't know. I just went
Knocks.
To a Boston
oh,
accent
yeah.
for Hard. Yeah.
Hard
you know, Hard Knocks. I don't know what happened there. I blacked out. I apologize. I'm back. There's a scene where Nate Orchard, who is no longer on the Browns, actually, I don't even think he might have gotten cut at the end of that training camp. But there's a scene where he comes up to Myles Garrett and Myles Garrett is like, hey, man, have you ever tried like changing your stance every
yes,
once in a
I
while?
Totally
and Nate Orchard
this.
And Nate Orchard, who's like a 5-year veteran, was like, no. And you're just like, what? like, how did no coach ever? And Miles is like, yeah, it's like you're gonna be predictable if you're just like, they're gonna know exactly what you're doing. He's like, oh wow. And I was just like blown away that nobody on the coaching staff had like talked to him about this, and Miles here for 2 years and he's like, yo, I just do some different stuff. So it's yeah, like there was no Baker's development sort of just stopped after his rookie year. Like he was on an upward trajectory, and then I feel like he got worse, got some bad habits, but that came back from his time in Oklahoma, and the coaching staff didn't like know what to do. And just kind of was like, well, we'll try again next week. Maybe it'll be better.
Hugh and Freddie, they just really weren't guys who like could stick to plans. Like they just got,
no,
couldn't handle
no,
their shit.
That's a great point.
Like they would get too revved up and too into the game and just like couldn't stick to like, the play chart. And it turns out the only time the Browns actually looked good was when Greg Williams was just like, okay, why don't we make a plan and then do the plan and everyone can be on the same page. And like, that's the only consistency they've ever had with someone who can do that. So,
yeah,
I mean, the bar is low, but like all Stefanski has to do is just like come up with a plan and act the plan and help people know what the plan is. Like, that's it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, it really is. Like, sometimes it feels just like it's so simple, and you just like people being on the same page. And like you said, like having a plan and being like, Baker, this is how, you know, we want you to hit these benchmarks. Like, we want to work with you on these things and like limit your interceptions and sort of, yeah, like and there just hasn't been that. And it's crazy. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic that the people they have in place will have a plan and have a philosophy. That was the other thing last year. Browns had no idea what they were doing offensively. Like, they just were like throwing stuff against the wall and being like, well, let's do this and this. And you heard multiple players being like, we had no idea what our identity was on offense. Like, you cannot have that.
I think we throw around no idea as like can be very hyperbolic, but they really did look like on television. They had no idea what was going on.
100%. Especially when they would get down and they had to, yeah, like there was, you know, the stat like Baker on the first 15 scripted plays and like coming out like first quarter and then out of halftime when a brief plan was put in place, he was great. And then when they had to go off script, yeah, they were just like, oh, we don't know. We didn't plan anything more than this. So we have no idea what we're doing. So that's why I feel at least somewhat good about this new coaching staff, because I don't think it's huge changes that they have to make. I just think it's like these small things that somehow this past coaching staff was not paying attention to and not putting enough thought or detail into. So I do have optimism there, because I do think the changes are small, but you know, it's the Browns. So who knows? And you know, all these plans go out the window, it seems, every time a season starts. So we will see.
And I mean, we just have to like Baker today, had a not by any of his own doing, a lot of self-imposed bad looks from Baker in a short span of this offseason, which is not encouraging, but nonetheless, we persist. Baker today was called out by Tony Grossi as being a was it the little fucking midget? I think that's what it was.
Yeah, that's I think that was the quote.
So that happened today, and Mr. Grossi was subsequently suspended from his job. I mean, if you don't know that and you're listening to this podcast, just hit us up and leave us a 5-star review and be like, here's why I didn't know about this. Congratulations. Like, you have escaped the bubble.
You have absolutely escaped the one thing that was talked about in Cleveland Twitter
and I mean,
today.
Listen, I know this is like a very niche conversation, but you like were in Cleveland for a long time. You were on KNR. You now live all the way over in my neck of the woods in Los Angeles. Although we live on opposite sides of the city, so you might as well still live in Cleveland.
Yeah, I was going to say, which I've come to learn, that it does feel like you could be in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, legit, the last time we saw each other was in Cleveland.
It was. Yeah, this is very true.
It was crazy when I was in Miami for the Super Bowl, how many people I also met from the west side of L.A. And I was like, oh, man, it's so nice to connect with you, because I'll never see you again.
Because I'll literally never drive over there too far.
No, it's like, I mean, it does feel like, I don't know how to like say this properly, but it does feel like, at least specifically for the Browns, and then you could talk about whatever you feel like about your experience in radio, was like the people covering the Browns and Cleveland media in general have just kind of been like broken. And to do it for so long at such a close, like up close place, has to mess with your psyche, or at least I imagine that it does. It does as a fan. But what was your, I don't know, reaction to Grossi, if you care, or if you just don't care? And I don't know, man. What's your thought about, I don't know, man, why'd you leave Cleveland, Jordan? Why'd you leave everyone behind?
I guess I can start with the Grossi thing. So, you know, I was at KNR for a year and a half, and like Grossi was a perfectly kind person to me. And like, I said this like this was in a text to a friend, like, it's no small thing when you get somewhere, and a person that, and you know, I was basically a part time there. I wasn't a full time employee. So like, I wasn't there all the time. You know, I didn't work with him personally a ton. I produced a bunch of shows that he was a guest on and stuff, so we interacted a fair amount. And like, it's no small thing for somebody like that, to somebody on, you know, Grossi's sort of level, I guess you can say, I would put that in quotation marks, but to like remember my name, you know, like after a couple times of meeting him. Like, I've, you know, I've been places where people high up don't care about the very small people, or people just starting out, or new people, or whatever. So like, you know, personally, as a guy, he seems fine. I just think that, like, I think what happened with him today is more just sort of like symptomatic of what happens. And this probably exists in other similar size market to Cleveland, but obviously, you know, you and I, and you know, that's where my experience is. So I can talk about it from a place of knowing. It's just like, whether it's Grossi or whether it's other people that have just been in the positions that they're in for a really long time, like they've just been at a certain space and occupying a certain job in Cleveland media, for sports media, for a very long time. And I think you get sort of comfortable there, and you sort of realize, especially like Grossi's been doing this for forever, like his entire
probably
life.
Probably longer than we've been alive. I can't.
He probably 100%,
but I'm just gonna assume.
No, I think you're right. And it's like, so you don't really have any threat of anybody coming up that's gonna take your job. Not only because you probably feel like, oh, I'm great at this, that would never happen, like, just because you probably have an ego, but also like, management isn't going to be like, hey, we need some new blood, or like whatever it is. And that just doesn't really seem like it's happening in Cleveland, like, at all. And so I think you get comfortable, and when you get comfortable, or when you feel sort of, I don't want to say invincible, that's too strong, but when you feel sort of like you're not thinking about consequences, because there's nobody directly vying for your job, or you feel like you know management so well and you feel so comfortable in your spot. And I think sometimes you slip up because you don't have that fear of any of that stuff. And I think, to me, like, that's sort of what happened today, was like, to just sort of casually say that. And I wouldn't care if the mics were on or off, or if I was just like hanging out, having beers with friends. Like, that's not just something you sort of casually say. Like, that's a really bad look for someone that covers.
And also, like, clearly, like, him and Baker hate each other. I mean, if you step back,
yeah,
a
like
bit,
it's, you could hear it in his voice.
They hate each other. Like,
yes. And you could hear it in his voice. Like, just, there is just like this disgust in it. And it's like, why? One, why? And two, like, as a reporter, I mean, I know I don't really know what he is. He does radio stuff, he writes stuff, but it's like as a reporter, man, you can't be like, you can't have that opinion. You can have it, you can't say it, you know, and you can't say it. You're at the combine, you're around other people. It's just to just kind of casually say it there blows my mind. But I think too, just like, from my experience, was whether it was at KNR or whether it was like meetings I had with people from other outlets in Cleveland, you just never really got the sense that there was going to be space for you to move up. And when you're in these lower positions, you're not making very much money. And, you know, for someone like myself too, who, I got very spoiled with my first job when I was working for a magazine that was like national and was like interviewing athletes and getting to do all this stuff. Like, there is a part of me where when you have to start at the bottom of the totem pole again, in a place where you sort of feel like you have more ability and have more experience and have done things that other people have not, and yet, you know, there's just no space for you because people just hold these jobs and have held them for forever. Like, it's very discouraging and it's super frustrating. And it's probably 90% of the reason I had to move to Los Angeles, because the freelance life I was living was just not sustainable. And like, that is because I couldn't find a job in Cleveland sports media. And like, it's not just me. There's so many other people that I know that are in Cleveland and crazy talented, and blogging or doing their own podcast or like whatever it is, that would crush some of these roles where you're getting more resources and you can go cover the teams every day and you're credentialed to all this stuff. Like, you know, that's the frustration, is that the access and the resources that you would have, you know, people are like, oh, just start your own thing. And like, yes, you absolutely should. And it's easier than ever to get to kind of create an audience and stuff. And that's what I've done. That's what you've done. Like, that's what other people have done. But it really is, there can be a limit to that stuff. And when you have resources and like a company behind you that would want to promote you and develop you and develop your talent. And it just seems like, it's not everybody, you know, not everybody in Cleveland sports media. There are obviously talented people working in it in some of those spots. But yeah, there is a climb that seems impossible because of the sort of old guard of people that are just there and companies that don't really seem to have any interest in looking for newer, younger talent that maybe is a bit more well-versed in how to connect with an audience in 2020 and maybe has some skills that would translate way better. But I don't know, man, it's hard and it's frustrating. And I think, you know, I tweeted some of this stuff earlier today, and I think you can see by the engagement with it that it kind of resonates with people. And I think a lot of people feel that way. But I don't, you know, I don't know what you do. I don't think it's going to change. So I think it's, you know, it's frustrating. There's limited opportunities, obviously, but it doesn't feel like those opportunities, even the in a limited sense, are like ever going to open up for people who are probably more talented and younger and would be probably better at those jobs. So I don't know what the answer is.
They're not boomers. So it's
exactly. You just got to become a boomer. Just fake it.
And
become a boomer.
I mean, it's so wild how many people are still around just from like our childhood.
Like, it is, man. It's crazy.
Some of these folks would, I don't know, just be different or have, you're right, there's like no, that's why I was excited whenever you are on KNR. I mean, the nice thing about living in another city is like you really get out of the Cleveland radio bubble. I will say that. It's just easier to turn it off. You can tune into it whenever you feel like it, but like you're really not kind of inundated by it. So I do feel like it is kind of this like, I don't know, self-eating snake or something where like all of these people have been there for so long and you're just, there's no way you can't be that close to so much heartbreak and pain and anger and not have it kind of like, kind of like just perpetuate itself in some kind of like sadistic flywheel.
For sure.
So, and to do that for so long is definitely going to take your toll on anyone. But like, you're right. It's just, there's no, it's frustrating because also I think radio in itself, you know, podcasting is slowly inching its way further and further into the relevance that radio has, and it's you know, there's not a lot of upward mobility. So listen, is Tony Grossi a bad dude? Probably not, but has he been doing it for 1,000 years, and does he talk like your crazy uncle? Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this I'll be fascinated to see what happens. This was like, there was levels of badness to that comment, and like, it's just going to be very interesting to see what happens. And I'm not exactly sure how you come back from that in terms of like covering the Browns. So it will be an interesting however long and what happens with his suspension and stuff. So I'll be fascinated.
He's definitely gotten his fair share of chances or second chances. Like,
yeah, I would say so.
Man. Yeah, man. No, I think I think this podcast in itself should hopefully be emblematic of, and what, you know, you did starting it, and hopefully at some point returning and just kind of like, you know, keeping your presence on following this team even after you left, I think resonates with people. I think it's you know, like, it's just also, we consume differently than people over 40. Like, I'm just like checking in on the Twitters while I'm watching everything. Like, I don't need to get in my car from 3 to 4:30 and listen to the radio like I did even 10 years ago.
No. And I don't even, you know, a lot of times what I was tuning into the radio for like Browns game specifically was like post game stuff, where like they're going to the locker room and they're feeding the audio back to the studio. So you're listening to it because you wanted to hear what the players were saying and what the coach is saying. And now that stuff is just tweeted out immediately by reporters with video. So it's like, you know, there even my dad, who, you know, is that era of like, yeah, like the like newspapers and listening to the radio and all that stuff. And he still has like he's still reading the sports page and he'll still throw on like Jim Donovan and stuff. But like, I'm watching a game with him and I look over and he's looking at Twitter at the same time that I'm looking at Twitter, you know? So it's like it's reached more people than just, yeah, like you and I and sort of millennials and all of that. Like, it's, you know, once my dad and guys my dad's age, like, got the hang of Twitter, now like he gets a ton of his news from there. So, you know, and especially during Browns games, Cavs games, whatever, he's following. He has a Twitter account and he follows the reporters and all that stuff. And he's getting a ton of information from there and having the second screen experience, just like all of us, you know, his sons are. So it really sort of bridged the gap. And I feel like unless you're like, yeah, like 70 and you just never had any interest and you didn't understand it, so you're never going to do it, fine. But I do think, like, you know, anybody kind of even 60s, 50s, whatever, like, it's such an accessible thing that, yeah, there just isn't a ton of reason anymore.
It's crazy, man. There's a really, and you know, the funny thing is, this is a Blue Wire podcast. Full disclosure, I am Blue Wire. I am Peter Blue Wire.
You're like Dr. Manhattan, right? Blue. You really committed, painted yourself, pants, and I respect it. Yeah, you have to. Yeah,
this,
I think that's
this is a PG-13 podcast. All right.
Yeah, we can't.
I say,
we can't have
once,
that.
But there's never any frontal nudity on this podcast.
The best.
We like the Kevin Jones, the founder and CEO of Blue Wire, worked at the Cleveland Browns for a little bit, and he was working in San Francisco for a while, covering teams. And he really, you know, in a similar way to you, just kind of like has kept this following of people who are craving the content that clearly exists outside of the ways that it's being traditionally presented. So I think, you know, Blue Wire has like three or four Browns or Cleveland based brownish podcasts, and like, listen, Clevelanders, like, the numbers are pretty good. I mean, I don't, like, you know, like, people in Cleveland like listening, yeah, to podcasts, I mean, about the Browns.
They do, and like, they're very,
like, I think there's just more like direct information. I mean, I don't have all of like radio and podcast numbers in front of me, but I know that like people are engaged from this podcast. I mean, people are engaged from just the response to, I mean, I also am the same way. You live in another city, I consume an embarrassing number of Browns podcasts. Just, yeah, how you get your,
yeah, I think that's
how you get your goods.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, when you have, yeah, like Cleveland loves sports, like people are super passionate about it, especially when it comes to the Browns. So it's like, the audience is always going to be there. And that's why I think it's frustrating that management or places and media outlets in the city don't want to take a chance on something new that they don't know. Because it's like, look, man, if they're good at it and they're talented and like they can connect with an audience, you're going to be fine. In fact, you'll probably be in a better place.
Also, a lot of the old guard really taps into this Cleveland, like, like, I mean, politics aside, like Rush Limbaugh, like rage, like so much of the old, yes, guard is so angry. And I feel like, yep, at least one of the things that, frankly, you know, the conversations that I have with Gates and we try to laugh about is like figuring out how we can just like stand to talk about this team and like not have to like act that way. Like, I feel like it is kind of, yeah, like a poisoning of the water that's coming from the top of the hill where all the old guard sits, and it kind of runs downstream and makes us all feel shitty. Because while it is terrible and sad and frustrating and feeling like life or death, those people who are doing post-game shows or weekly shows and are acting, I mean, frankly, fucking nuts, is just like has an effect, yeah, on how people think about it. And that's not to say that, like, yeah, you should or shouldn't react however you want, but like there is like a level of kind of like, especially I think when you're in Cleveland and when you're, it's so in your face that it kind of just, like I said, is like self-perpetuating.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I very much agree with that. And I've never been a person that, like, yeah, I don't like people yelling, people screaming, people getting super worked up, people having to have like some crazy take that they need to get off. Like, I've never been that person. I understand that, like, there's an audience for that, and people, for whatever reason, from, you know, Skip Bayless to whenever that sort of took off, like, it people loved it. And so, you know, I know there's an audience for that. But at the same time, I think, like, people are going to be, so like this Brown season, for example, yes, like you're like super angry and you like you had all these hopes for it. But I think people also just want to know why. They want to know, like, why? Okay, why are the Browns losing? Like, what is going on? And you don't have to be a person that know, you know, like, shout out to, you know, like, Jake Burns is a guy who's like super like X and O's and knows so much about football and all of it. And his podcast speaks to a very like educated football fan type of audience. But like at the same time, you don't even have to go to like the depths of that level to just have a smarter conversation with people about stuff that's going on. And you just don't have to, like, I can't stand people on Twitter that are like somewhat media personalities or just like gotten in the media and they just feel like they have to have a take. So they just tweet some wild stuff. Like, I can't stand it. And it's like, you don't have to do this, man. You don't have to just come out here and like give some wild take. Like, just explain, if you have a good personality and like you're smart, like just do your thing. And like people, it's going to resonate with people. I think there's so many examples of that. And so, like, yeah, you hope that that transition is happening. And that's why places like this, like Blue Wire and people that have podcasts, it just makes it easier because you can sort of just get on here and do that without feeling like you have to have a shtick or like you have to have some sort of, I don't know. Yeah, you have to like have some sort of character. You've got to give some sort of take, because like I can't, it's just not, it just sucks. Like, it's just not good content.
I mean, you and I are both in agreement, though, that the Browns are 100% making the Super Bowl next year. That's not.
Well, I mean, obviously, like, it's, I don't want to say 16-0 because I don't want to be arrogant about it.
You should,
but
you should say probably 15-0-1.
Yeah. Yes, they will tie their first game and then they'll go on a run.
They'll go 18-0 and make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So, like, I don't, you know, I don't want to jump the gun here, but I will be. Wherever the Super Bowl is being hosted, I'm already.
This team is a disease, Jordan.
It is, man. Like, it is. But this, and it's funny because it's like, yeah, you know, so many people are just like, hey, man, why? And it's like, I don't know. I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer for you. I just am waiting for the longest payoff in the history of
this
waiting
is the
for
funniest
a payoff.
Joke
so
that's taken 30 years, like people have lived and died before this joke is paid off.
Yeah, but it, you know, when it hits, oh man, you know, that's what keeps us going. So in 2041, when it's finally time, it's gonna be great.
Oh man, it is funny too that like everyone got burned by the Browns on the national, and now they come around in LA, they're like, man, the Browns, what the fuck? It's like, yeah, dude, it's been like that every year of my life for 20 years, man.
I know. This was like, that's such a great point. Like, this was the year that like people were, other people outside of Cleveland were finally paying attention to the Browns. You know, like coworkers of mine, like all these people, and they'd be like, hey man, I what happened? I'm like, if you only knew.
Like, oh, you know? How long do you have? Do you have a lifetime? Do you have a lifetime to listen to the last 20 years of my life? This isn't even like bottom 10 years.
No, man, no. I was like, oh, you think, yeah, do you want to sit down and have a conversation about, like, I don't know, pick any 2009 or something? Like, yeah, like, we got time. What do you need?
I'll tell you a little story about a man named Charlie Fry.
Let me tell you a story about kid from
just,
Akron.
Like, full, like, nom, like, vets smoking heaters. Just like, let me tell you.
Yeah, like, oh, the lights are dimmed in your house. And you're
we
like, take a
Kelly
seat.
Holcomb really had it made. Yeah. Well, Jordan, people can find your work on, I believe it's The Checkdown.
Yes, they can venture over to The Checkdown. They can venture over to my, you know, I think science confirmed that it is the best Twitter account on the internet, at CleveZerm. So I think that's a recent award that I won. So
I do think that's actually what the CDC was working on instead of anything else.
The coronavirus is an afterthought. It's really been a lot of research towards my Twitter account. So definitely follow me, because that seems like a big deal.
If you're It would be if somehow you are listening to this podcast and not following Jordan, God bless you. And then go follow him, and he'll be firing off some brown takes here. I believe in the
some very some brown takes. Yes. Some brownie brown takes.
Gates and I used to basically just do a podcast for ourselves before we stepped in for you. And it was called the Browned Out Pod. So I did.
It's really the perfect.
It's kind of just like the R-rated version of what the Rebuild is. It's just whatever it is, whatever you name your Browns podcast listener who's going to like take on the man now that you've been inspired by this conversation. Just naming something that's like ambiguous and constantly happening, because that's what the Browns are. Mm-hmm. They're just ambiguous and
yes, they are. They're everywhere and you can't escape them, even though you would very much like to.
All right, man. Thanks for the time.
Peter, this has been wonderful. Thank you for continuing to hold down the fort. It's truly an honor.
Dude, I feel like you're my dad who went out for a pack of smokes and just like stepped back in 9 months later to grab a suitcase.
Mm-hmm. I had to, to get some things figured out. I had to drive a little bit. But I'm back. I'm back to take care of you as my
I am your podcast child. We will end it on that note. Zerm, thanks so much, dude.
Peter, thanks, man.